The Culinary Libertarian Podcast, episode 65.
Welcome to the Culinary Libertarian Podcast, where the philosophy is free, but the food is on you.
Hello, folks. Welcome back to the podcast. Dan Reed here, the Culinary Libertarian. Happy to have you here. Happy to be here. Navigate over to culinarylibertarian.com/podcasts to find all my social media links. The Culinary Libertarian is most active on Twitter and Facebook, but I'm also on Instagram and have a YouTube channel where you can see some of the items I have made. From the podcasts page, you can click the link to the support page, and there you'll find links to some of my affiliates, the Tom Woods Liberty Classroom, the McClanahan Academy, and my Cranky Without Coffee mug store. With the affiliate links, I do earn a commission at no cost to you when you make a purchase. One of those affiliates is Kiko's Cakes. Kiko is a skilled pastry chef. I've watched his videos and he gets it right. He teaches you how to make amazing looking cakes, torts, and desserts at home, but they look like they came from a French bakery. Click over to culinarylibertarian.com/Kiko's Cakes or click the banner on the support page and get access to content right away. All the videos are online, and you can make that amazing Christmas dessert to wow your friends and family. CulinaryLibertarian.com/Kiko's Cakes. That's KeikosCakes. My guest today is no guest at all. It's me. We'll be talking about sourdough bread and getting into the process of making it the right way, which is making the seed, then the starter, then the dough, and maintaining those things, and it's not a lot of work. Well, the bread part can be a little bit of work, but it isn't. It's a lot of time, but not a lot of work. So we're going to talk about some of those details, lots of those details. Actually, I've got to get pretty thorough here. But I think it's a good time to look toward the new year and without making resolutions, because nobody cares about that, focusing on finding some of our lost arts, and making bread is a lost art. So let's bring back the lost arts. And one of the things I want to do, this is just an aside for 2020, is talk a little bit more about that. I already talked about pickles, which is a lost art, but also things like vinegars and mustards and getting into just more of the kind of self-reliance cooking and preserving. So enough of that. Let's get in to bread. A man I know recently returned from Europe and spoke reverently about eating the bread of a baker who has maintained the sourdough culture he got from his mother, who got it from her father. And the culture has been maintained for 150 years. These attitudes surrounding the making of a simple sourdough, giving it an intimidating mystery and off-putting fussiness. There is excessive value placed on sourdough from old, well-guarded cultures, as if these features imparted greater authenticity to a sourdough. The truth is that many of us, professional and amateur bakers alike, perpetuate this myth. It inhibits the home baker from attempting sourdough and participating in the romance of bread making. That's a quote from Daniel Leader in his book Bread Alone. He's right. There is an impressive mythology about bread making and baking. You need to mix with your left hand while on the eve of the full moon facing west, standing on one foot. As a culture, we've come so far from daily baking that what was a normal activity seems superstitious and rife with ceremony. It has become so mysterious, we could never do that. Yes. Yes, you can. Bread. All bread used to be sourdough bread. That's pretty simple when you think about how commercial yeast is a pretty new thing. In Ed Wood's book, World Sourdoughs from Antiquity, he finds a bakery from ancient Egypt with large baking vessels for no-knead bread. The ancient Hebrews made unleavened bread, and in history, there are more cases of ground grain and some type of mixture, be it milk or water, mixed together and baked. The art and craft of sourdough bread seems rather new by comparison. Bread, the baker, and the bakery are so intertwined in human history that it is difficult to find a culture which does not have some form of the baked foam of flour and water as part of its landscape. The symbolism is everywhere. In the aforementioned Jewish matzah and the 40 years in the desert, told by God they are not to eat leavened bread. Today, kosher for Passover matzah is strictly watched to ensure the dough of water and flour is baked within 18 minutes of mixing to ensure no yeasts thrive. Of course, Christian tradition of the communion and the larger use of breaking bread as a sign to friend and foe alike that food and dinner is a sacred time to enjoy the gifts of the soil and the gifts from God. Homer from ancient Egypt spoke of bread, and in Greece, as other cultures, bread was part of festivals and celebrations. For the food historian in you, there is a rich history to find and read, but this episode is focusing on the rich and singular story of the modern sourdough. Without hesitation, the most popular sourdough bread is the San Francisco sourdough rye. Now, there are at least two interesting things here. Three things. No one expects four things. One thing is that the flavor so famous of the San Francisco sourdough is not from the yeast alone, even though there is a yeast which is exclusive to the Bay Area, but also the bacteria which do the fermenting as the yeast consumes the sugar. Peter Reinhart and I discussed this a bit in our bread episode, culinarylibertarian.com/51. We talked about phytic acid and its role in breaking down the dough to make it more tolerable to human guts. This leads to a very interesting and quickly growing field of research, gut health, gut microbiomes, and the microbiome field. Almost by way of an end-of-the-year recap of some topics, the discussion of bread at all seems in conflict with the talks I've had with Jimmy Clegg about the keto lifestyle. And talking about carbs leads to my talk with Kai Mamonis about sugars and the diet. While both guests made clear, each in his own way, the human body is vastly complex, and even now that we know it is more complicated than we ever thought, it still seems even magnitudes more to learn. I'm not here to advise you on keto or not keto. That's a decision you have to make after being well informed about what it is and what to expect. I am here to talk about making sourdough bread, probably rye, for reasons I'll talk about shortly. Also, I'll add a link to the show notes page, culinarylibertarian.com/65, for a gut biome article. It's not called that, but it's easier to remember, and it's a fascinating read, and the author has many, many, many rabbit holes to go down for more information. Now, sourdough. There are at least two differences between sourdough and straight dough. Three differences. Sourdough uses, mostly, no commercial yeast. Daniel Leder, author of the book Bread Alone, which I quoted earlier and is one of my foundational books for bread, well, learning and making, uses a wee bit of commercial yeast to give the sourdough seed, which is called the chef, a kick. Item two, not difference two, is there is a new vocabulary for sourdough. The chef is the seed, and from the seed, the chef, you make the starter, and from the starter, you make the final dough. That's difference two, a vastly longer process, much more time intensive, but not too much more labor to get one or two loaves. Difference three is a keener sense of what the dough is and what it wants and how to read it. A wild yeast dough made in August in Oregon or New Jersey or Michigan will be vastly different than that same dough mixed in those places in January. All breads require knowledge in the fingertips, but the knowledge at sourdough bread levels is much more refined. It's a bit like thinking about the ideas of don't hurt people and don't take their stuff. That's plainly simple, and even a kid gets it. Then think about how the forced setting of prices for labor harms the business and the people willing to work for less just to get that job in the shop. It's still the principle, don't take people's stuff and don't harm people, but at a deeper level of understanding. That's sourdough bread. It's still bread, but a deeper understanding of what flour, salt, water, and time on the clock, can produce. Cardinal Biggles, there are four differences. Yes, there are. Time, as in minutes and hours of the day. Sourdough starter, the chef, takes days. Not from you. You only need a few minutes a day. But for the yeasts to do their yeasty thing, and the bacteria to do their bacteria thing, and for all that to come together to the final product, well, that happens at its own pace, and you can do little to help without risking quality. So, we go from the Spanish Inquisition of Monty Python to the Princess Bride and Inigo, who hates to wait. Wait. But wait you must, for the bread knows. It always knows. The question is, do you? The answer is, you will. To start making sourdough, we need to start making the chef, which is the seed for the starter for the sourdough. I'm a big fan of a couple of baker authors, Peter Reinhardt and Daniel Leder, but I know there are lots more authors out there and very respectable ones. I don't want to think that these are the two only. There are very, very many great authors. I just happen to respond to these two. So pick one that you like, and that's really where you start. As with anything involving more than one person and an opinion, preferences will vary, of course, but the basics remain mostly the same. And I do want to stress that I'm talking about making sourdough at home, not on the commercial level. If you wish to use Daniel Leder's advice and add a few specks of commercial yeast, then do it. My interest is in you learning to make the bread. Once you get the feel of what's going on in the bowl and in the dough, then take your knowledge to the next step. So, a note or three about flours. I mentioned rye flour before, and I told you I would say more later. Now is later. I'll read Daniel Leder's sentence in his chapter, Sourdough Rye from Bread Alone, which will be linked on the show notes page. He writes this, rye flour is highly responsive to the fermentation process. That's it. There is, of course, a lot more to know should you wish to know it, but for us, that's enough. Also responsive to fermentation is whole grain flour, not whole wheat, ground by you at home in a specially designed flour mill. Our friend John Moody from episode 42 grinds his own flour for the breads he and his wife make at home. As I read about fresh flour, it is a different baking experience entirely from the commercial stuff. That's a rabbit hole for another day. For home use and ease of stating, let's stick with commercial rye flour for now. Recall, this is the chef, the seed for the starter, which will then make the bread. The whole idea here is we're capturing the wild yeast that lives where you live. It's in the air that you breathe. It's everywhere. And really, truly, it is everywhere. So day one, mix 4 ounces of spring water, and water really does make a big difference in bread, with 3 ounces of medium grind dry flour, organic if you can find it. As Daniel writes, a mere pinch of yeast, fresh or dry, to give it a boost is okay. This is not necessary for you purists, and its contribution will be overshadowed soon enough by the vast amounts of wild yeast we're going to gather. Stir those ingredients together in a 2-quart glass jar with a stiff wooden spoon. Now, glass jars, 2-quart glass jars can be maybe difficult to find. I've used a glass bowl. I've also used metal because in a restaurant, you know, they don't have a lot of glass, but a glass is good because you can see it, and that's going to be important coming up. So I've used a glass bowl. Make sure to cover it well with plastic wrap and then secure that with a rubber band from, say, like a broccoli stalk or an asparagus bunch. So mix all that together with your wooden spoon. That nice thick paste, scrape down the sides, cover tightly, let stand for 24 hours at moderate temperatures, which is 74 to 80 degrees. Cooler is better than warmer in my experience. Day 2. The chef will probably look like flour glue. The smell should be of rye flour with perhaps a mild sweetness. Use a clean utensil and taste a wee little bit. It might have a slight tang, maybe not. There may be a few bubbles on top, but if not, that's okay. It's what you don't see that's important, and that's the yeast activity. To yesterday's chef, add 4 ounces of water and 3 ounces of rye flour. Stir vigorously again with the wooden spoon, scrape down the sides, cover, let stand another 24 hours. Day 3. There should be some activity now as a slight increase in volume in the jar or the bowl. It should be a little bit bubbly and have a slightly sour smell and a taste. So taste it again, just a wee little bit. You should notice a change in the tartness. You should also notice like more effervescence, little bubbles on your tongue. Stir it a bit with a wooden spoon and listen. Baking at all stages of bread production is a listening task as well as tasting and smelling and seeing. Do you hear air bubbles popping? Lift the spoon and let the chef drop back onto itself. Are you seeing some glutinous strands and does it look a little bit gloppy? Add 4 ounces of water and 3 ounces of rye flour. Stir vigorously, scrape down the sides with a rubber spatula, and cover and store again for 24 hours. Folks, let's take a second out of the bread to talk about Christmas dinner. Christmas dinner is expected to be a really special treat. Make it so this year with some fresh Maine lobsters flown right to your front door. Click over to Lobster Anywhere with my affiliate link, culinarylibertarian.com/Maine Lobster, to order your live Maine Lobster. While you're on their site, check out the options for frozen seafood or lobster tails for your freezer, and check out also the appetizers and the soups. Or consider maybe a lobster roll for all those college bowl games. Click over with my affiliate link, culinarylibertarian.com/Maine Lobster, to order today. Lobster Anywhere is your trusted source for the best Maine lobster delivery to your front door, overnight, guaranteed. Lobster Anywhere lobsters are available year-round from a sustainable fishery and locally caught by independent lobstermen. Lobster Anywhere specializes in live Maine lobster and frozen lobster tail delivery. Lobster Anywhere is dedicated to resource conservation and preservation, so you know your children and your grandchildren will be able to enjoy this special food. Sorry, U.S. delivery only. Click culinarylibertarian.com/Maine lobster for the freshest lobster you'll ever have at your front door. Now, let's get back to the show. Day 4. The chef is nearly ready. It should be quite active, having increased in volume well. You should see lots of bubbles, smell it, and taste it again. Notice the difference from yesterday. Spoon some chef again with the wooden spoon and watch it fall. You should see a good cell structure forming and a better cohesion to the chef. Add 4 ounces of water, 3 ounces of rye flour, stir vigorously, cover stand for 8 hours. This is the big change now. Now we're getting close. The chef should nearly double in volume in that 8 hours. To verify this growth, place a piece of masking tape on the outside of the glass bowl. This is why we want glass or jar. Make the top of the tape even with the top of the chef. This is an easy way to spot how it's growing so you can see when double has happened. If time is a crunch and you cannot make the starter now with your now ripe chef, place the chef in the cooler, tightly covered, for up to 3 days. Use it within those 3 days to make the starter. So, it's a quick recap. In nearly 5 days, with relatively little labor or not much effort, we've made the chef. So, patience is always a critical component of wild yeast breads. Now, to make the starter, we're going to use 9 ounces of the room temperature chef measured into a mixing bowl on a scale. To that, add 5 ounces of rye flour and 4 ounces of spring water. If you're measuring everything into the same bowl, obviously tear your stuff, but when it comes to the flour, it's easy to pull out too much if you've added too much. The water is the bigger problem. So 4 ounces of water is also a half a cup, so that's pretty easy. But be careful that you're not over measuring, because you cannot easily get that back. Mix carefully because, also mix well, but mix carefully because the ratios are different and a zesty mixing is going to splash ingredients out, and then you've ruined your ratios and possibly your counter and you. So mix with a stiff wooden spoon, and I'm not kidding, I've broken wooden spoons before until it is a thick and stiff paste. Place a piece of tape even with the top of the starter like before to easily monitor the rise of up to twice the volume. Cover the starter well and let it rise, which may take 8 to 10 hours. Now, a reasonable person will notice that there's a lot of time waiting. My suggestion is do most of this mixing at night so the yeasts are doing their thing while you do your sleeping thing. The division of tasks. Now that the starter is made, you have some chef which remains. Maintain the chef for later use. That's pretty easy to do. It also puts you 4 days ahead for the next starter, because now that you've made the chef, you don't need to do that part again. Maintain the chef, which should be about 9 ounces, with 4 ounces of rye flour and 5 ounces of water. Stir well, scrape it on the sides, cover, let stand for 8 to 10 hours. If all has worked as intended, the chef will double. Then, refrigerate the chef and make more starter within 7 days, following the procedure above, and maintain the leftover chef again, just as described. Now, we are ready to mix the bread. This is the caraway rye from Bread Alone with a few of my comments. These are Daniel's ratios, mostly. First the ratios. So 18 ounces of starter, which should be the whole quantity of starter that you've made. 24 ounces of spring water. 9 ounces of rye flour, 19 ounces of whole wheat flour, 3/4 of an ounce of salt, 1 ounce of caraway seeds. If you really don't like them, don't put them in, but they're really nice. And up to 30 ounces of red flour. It's, you know, you might need more than that because I don't know about hydration. Your kitchen's different. When I mixed this the first time, it was just, it was so wet. The dough was just so wet. I was sure it wasn't going to work. It finally did, but it took a long time. So flour hydrates at a different rate. Each one hydrates at a different rate. And all that stuff is different based on the flour you've used and where you are and what the humidity is where you are and all kinds of things. So those are the things that I can know. This is where the craft and skill of the baker makes the difference. And you're learning, so you'll figure this out. Trust me, this is going to work out. High hydration doughs, that is water, high water content doughs, are a particular challenge to work with, and it is from these doughs that we most often see the doughs with the breads with the various hole sizes in the crumb. And, you know, so you look at a really good French bread and it's got small holes and big holes, and this is the kind of thing that makes a baker swoon. A stiffer dough is easier to work with. The chief issues with a wet dough is that it simply doesn't stay where you put it, and you get it all over your fingers, and then maybe on the palms of your hand. It's the kind of thing that makes some bakers just crazy. They just can't stand that feeling. Well, that's part of what baking is, and if you're dealing with a wet, high hydration dough, and they'll speak about that in terms of the percentage. So an 80 or 85% hydration, that's a very, very wet dough. And it takes a little bit of practice to learn how to deal with that. But it's going to make a really flavorful bread, even if it's a bit of a challenge to work with. If you must start with a stiffer dough to get the feel of what the dough is, and that's okay. There's no judgment here. Making the dough is the important part. Place the starter and the water in the bowl, like a 6-quart bowl. You could use a stand mixer or just something that's big enough to hold it all. Stir them together gently with a wooden spoon to break up the starter into the water so that it gets kind of frothy. And while it's sitting there doing its frothy thing, measure the rest of your ingredients. Add the rye flour to the starter water mix and stir that in well. Add the whole wheat flour, the salt, the caraway seeds, and just start with the third of the bread flour. Mix that together until it's a mass that's really difficult to work with. Now, turn that out onto the counter and knead, adding flour as necessary. Whoa, there, Danny boy. What's this kneading on the counter thing? Well, it is possible, and it is how bread was done, and it is one heck of a shoulder and forearm workout. If you use a stand mixer, or if you're going to use a mixer, a handheld mixer will not do. It must be a stand mixer, and a heavy-duty one at that. Bread doughs, and this one especially, it seems, can overheat a motor quickly. Also, smaller bowls, say like a 4-quart size, might be too small to mix this dough effectively. Add the water in the starter as described. Add the rye and knead on the machine with the dough hook on low speed. Add the whole wheat, the salt, the caraway, and that third of the quantity of bread flour. Bring it all together. Mix on low to medium low for up to 12 minutes, making sure that the dough is actually being mixed and not stirred, and that mixed being kneaded and not just stirred and flopped around, and that the mixing machine doesn't walk off the counter, which can happen. Mixing the dough in the machine produces friction because it's hitting the sides of the bowl, and friction is heat. A dough with wild yeast is best kept below 78 degrees. Well, frankly, all doughs are best kept below 78 degrees, but wild yeast in particular. Use an instant-read thermometer to check that the dough is not too hot. If the dough is too hot, it can be placed in the cooler, but now this just extends the time needed to finish mixing, finish kneading, get full fermentation, shape, proof, and bake. So managing your dough as you're going is a better process than stopping and cooling and going back to this. Once the dough is mixed, place it in a lightly buttered bowl to rise until double in size. Yes, cover the bowl. Butter, it doesn't have to be butter. I think butter is a good choice because butter and bread taste good together. You could use anything you want. You could use duck fat, chicken fat, beef fat. You could use olive oil. I would avoid, of course, the seed oils, but that's, you know, we've already talked about that. When the dough has doubled, and I don't know how long that will take in your house, tip it out onto a floured work surface and gently divide it into two equal-looking pieces. Handling the dough will degas the dough. That cannot be avoided. But do work so as not to degas the dough unnecessarily, which means don't flatten it out like a pancake. The wild yeast has had a very long, hard day and may not have the strength left to push that dough up again. So shape it into rounds or batards. Allow them to proof in a banneton, which is that basket that has the canvas lining in it, or just on a floured, pretty well floured, non-terry cloth, clean kitchen towel, seam side up, covered with another towel until that dough is nearly doubled in size. Once the bread is in the banneton or on the towel, the French have a word. They call that piece of canvas a couche. Once it's wherever it's going to be, proofing, into its final shape, turn the oven on to 450 degrees. When the bread is ready to bake, how do I know that? It's going to be double in size, and when you gently touch the dough, it's going to spring back mostly, but leave maybe a teeny bit of an indent. Tip the doughs onto a well-floured peel. That's the little thingy that the pizza guys use to put bread in pizzas in and out of the oven. Score the tops with a serrated knife or a razor blade, maybe a quarter inch, not more than half of an inch, and like little scores like you've seen on baking shows or in the books. And then carefully place the dough in the oven on a baking stone if you've got one. So using a peel to get the bread off, it's kind of a zen thing. Your bread is on the peel, stationary. So your task is to quickly pull the peel out from under. It's like the magic. I'm going to pull the tablecloth out from under the set table. Everything on the table remains, but the tablecloth goes whoosh, right away. Well, you're kind of doing that with the peel. The bread's going to stay there. The peel is going to come out from under it. That takes some practice, and I've decorated the bottom of an oven and the floor with some bread doughs, and that's scary business. If you need to, use a wooden spoon to sort of just help keep the bread stationary while you pull the peel out from under the bread and it goes onto the baking stone. If you don't have a baking stone, and not everyone does, and you don't need it, then tip the doughs onto a parchment-lined cookie sheet or baking pan, score them and put them into the oven, the hot oven, and then take your, if you've got a spray bottle, spray the sides of the oven a couple of times to create some steam and close the oven door. If you don't have a spray bottle, when you turn the oven on, as the bread is starting to proof, put a little pie pan or some kind of a small metal pan on the bottom of the oven, and then when you add the bread to the oven, pour a little bit of water into that metal pan. That's going to make steam, and then close the oven door. After 3 minutes, repeat the process, either steam, spraying the sides of the oven, not the bread, or put a little bit more water in that little pan, and then close the oven door and set the timer for 17 minutes, and then bake. Ready, bake! After 17 minutes, reduce the temperature to 275, and then bake until it's done. All right, Mr. Smarty Pants, how do I know when it's done? Well, we're going to set the timer for a full time of 40 minutes. So add another 20 minutes to the timer, Then we're going to take a look. So first, you'll start to smell the bread. The whole house will start to smell like a bakery. Look at the crust. Is it a deep brown color? Carefully, with a clean folded towel, lift a loaf out of the oven, close the door. Turn the loaf over and place it near your ear, don't burn your ear, and then thump, thump, thump at the bottom of the loaf. It should sound hollow. No one ever does this. It's kind of like thumping an empty styrofoam container. It should sound like there's nothing in there. If it doesn't sound hollow, and this does take practice, give it another 5 minutes in the oven, and then remove it to a cooling rack. Now is the hard part. Waiting. More waiting. Up until now, it was easy. But now, there's this thing you've made, this bread. You've brought this flour and water to life. And now you have to wait. But your waiting shall be rewarded. Wait at least 30 minutes for the baking process to finish. We've talked about this before. Just because it has been removed from the oven doesn't mean it is done baking. There's a lot of things that have to go back that need time. And when you cut the loaf too early, and I'm guilty of this with the brioche, it just stops all that stuff. And that's not fair to the bread. The bread wants to be the best it can be, so give it another 30 minutes. When the allotted time has passed, slice off the end, slather that with some butter, and enjoy every crunchy, chewy, sour bite. If you've listened to this show, you know I don't paint. I don't carve wood either. I can imagine a painting teacher, Bob Ross perhaps, saying, "It's just simply a matter of putting the paint on the canvas and making happy little trees." No. I know this bread making process sounds complicated and challenging. If it is a new thing to do, it is complicated and challenging. But that's not a reason not to do it. You can make half the amount of chef to make half the amount of starter and make a loaf of bread. It's the same effort. It is easy to feel overwhelmed and think something has gone wrong. Maybe it has. Maybe it hasn't. But recall what Peter Reinhardt said, "Bread made with love is delicious." Now, that's a paraphrase, but you get the spirit of the message. Happy baking. You can do this. And the reason I'm certain of it is I did too. Like any good cook, I avoided baking completely. That a cook can turn around and be a baker means you can do it too, because I'm just the guy with the podcast. You can do this. Let's see your work on the Eating Liberty Facebook group. I've got a couple of bakers in there already. I'm not going to mention his name because he didn't tell me I could, but he's got his work there. You can go see it. And it's good. He did a good job, and you can show us what you've done. One last thing. Make notes. In my copy of Bread Alone, I have paperclip notes from every bake I ever did for every recipe I baked. I dated them. I indicated what day it was to know about like the humidity and the temperature roughly. So January versus July in Tallahassee, that's a big difference. What happened in the mix? How quickly did it rise? How was the crumb? The more information you can obtain on your notes about your bake and your baking and your mixing, the better a baker you'll become. So the next time you make it, you'll have this knowledge to make a better loaf or a better cookie or whatever you're making. All right, folks, that's going to do it. I have a few links on the show notes page, culinarylibertarian.com/65. For bread tools such as the Benetons and some of it's called the lam, the razor handled thing that the bakers use to score the bread. Also a link for bread stones and for pizza peels. My own personal suggestion for pizza peel is to buy an aluminum one. The wood ones are nice, and I have a wood one, and you can cut the pizza on the peel. But the ones, no, two, two biggest drawbacks to the wood one is that the dough, especially the pizza, can stick to the peel when you go to put it in the oven, and that's no good. Also, the wood is so thick that trying to get the pizza back onto the peel to get it out of the oven can sometimes be difficult. The aluminum peel, while not as attractive, is much thinner and much easier to get the pizza in and out of the oven. And speaking of links, some of the affiliates and other resources at my Gifts for Cooks page, culinarylibertarian.com/gifts, might still be orderable in time for Christmas delivery. Of course, there is also the gift card option. Please do subscribe to the show on your favorite podcatcher, rate the show, and leave a review. Make those algorithm bots do something, after all. Have a good week, and I'll see you soon. Music for the Culinary Libertarian Podcast is provided by Matthew Bankert at mattbankert.com.